Nashtaprayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yuttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Toto Jayam Udirayet Krishne Swadamo Pagate Dharma Ganadi Bisaha Kalo Nashta Drishamesha Pura Narko Danoditaha Shrimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsyam Ekam Amala Gyanam Param Giyate Tatra Gyana Viraga Bhakti Sahitam Naishkaram Yam Avishkritam Tachchinvan Supatan Vicharana Paro Bhaktya Vimuchyen Naraha Shlokam Ekam Tadardam Va Padam Padardam Eva Va Sharavanyo Nushunyat Punat Yatmanam Eva Saha Saravidanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tad Rasamrita Triptasya Nanyatra Svad Rati Kuchit Krishna Tulya Bhagavata Vibhu Sarva Shrai Prati Shloke Prati Akshare Nana Artakai Adi Madhye Ante Bhagavate Kai Vishnu Bhakti Nitya Sadhya Siddha Akshaya Avyai Premamaya Bhagavata Krishnara Sri Anga Tahate Kahina Bhata Gopya Krishnaranga Vande Ham Shiguro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigurun Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragnatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padanna Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Nittinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvashesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarane Radha Samukha Samsaktim Saki Sangha Nivasinim Tamaham Satatam Vande Guru Rupam Param Sakim Yankali Rupa Sharira Nadarata Tan Braja Prima Mahanidhi Kutarika Kon Kapata Ugadata Shri Rup Shri Sanatan Bhatt Raghunath Shri Jeev Gopala Bhatt Dasa Raghunath Ichai Gosar Kari Charanan Vandhan Jahoite Bignanash Abhishta Puran Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Anandalila Maya Vigrahaya Himavadivyachchavisundaraya Tasmai Maha Primarasa Pradaya Chaitanya Chandraya Namo Namaste. Balavi Varanamboja Malane Nirtishalane Nama Pranatapalaya Sri Krishnaya Namo Namaha Shriman Rasarasarambi Vamshi Vatatatastitaha Karshan Venusuner Gopir Gopinata Shriestunaha Mahabhava Sarupa Tvam Krishna Priyavariyasi Prima Bhakti Prada Devi Radhiketam Namam Yaham Shriman Rasarasarambi Vamshi Vata Tatastitaha Karshan Venusvaner Gopir Gopinatha Shriestunaha Bhajami Radham Aravinda Netram Smarami Radham Madarasmitasyam Vadami Radham Karunabharadram Tato Mamanyasti Gatirnakapi Shri Mahapuran Shrimad Bhagavat Ki Jai 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 Shri Radhe Rasa Panchadhyaya, Chapter 29 through 33 of Dasama Skanda. Chapter 29, verse 2. Tato Duraja Kakuba Karer Mukham Pratya Vilimpan Arunena Shantame Sacharshaninam Udagachchucho Mrijan Priya Priyaya Iva Dirga Darshana. We're finishing a discussion on the first word, Udaraja. Udaraja, the king of the stars, the lord of night, Chandrama, Purnamasi, Sharad Purnima. He's the main character in this verse, acting as an excitant and stimulant to the love, romantic love within the heart of Krishna and Radha and all the gopis. On that Purnima night in the autumn season, the full moon rose, anointing the face of the eastern horizon with the reddish hue of his comforting rays. And by this, Sharad Purnim, Uduraj, dispelled the pain of everyone who watched him rise. Uduraj, the full moon, was like a beloved husband returning to his wife after a long absence. And at that time, he will adorn or rub red kunkum, Arunena, red kunkum on her face to make her happy and to show his loving affection. So we're discussing this word Udaraj. And it's very nice. This analogy is there. There's the king and the stars. There's a husband and wife. And there's Krishna and the gopis. And there's the conditioned souls in Bhagavan. All these four comparisons can be drawn from this verse. The Adibhautika Vichar, the moon and the stars, and Udipan, Vibhav, the factors that are bringing about the Leela and initiating the romantic evening, the sacred love story of Krishna and the gopis. This is Adibhautika Vichara. Then the Adiatmika Vichara is the Nayaka, the Madhurya Nayak, the Madhurya Nayaka, Radha and Krishna, and all the Brajaramanis gathered together under the full moon. This is a transcendental Divya Vichara. And then there's that's the Adidaivika Vichara, the transcendental. And Adiatmika, what lesson, can we derive any lesson for our lives, for our sadhana, any encouragement, inspiration, hope? We can. Krishna is everywhere in the Bhagavatam, and his devotees are everywhere in the Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad, opulent, beautiful, attractive, compelling, forceful, purifying, and sanctifying. Srimad. And Bhagavatam means stories about the Savior Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, and his various expansions, and the Sevak Bhagavan, the devotee, the Bhakta, the Premi Bhakta, the Karma Mishra Bhakta, the Gyan Mishra Bhakta. Different levels and types of bhaktas and devotees of the Lord and its various expansions and manifestations as Vishnu, Ram, Dasavatar, and finally Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. And the greatest devotees are there, the Mahishis of Dwarka, and finally the Gopis of Vrindavan, with the pinnacle, topmost devotee is Srimati Radhika, Radharani. So this, if we want to derive some meaning here for us, we heard that the full moon is rising, illuminating the entire sky, illuminating the sky with light, soothing, cooling light, and it's comforting, relieving everyone from the pain and discomfort of the scorching hot days of autumn. And then it's actually acting on the human beings. Let's say the Krishna, Bhagavan, and his Nityasiddha, Parishads, associates, eternal associates, the gopis, to stimulate romantic feelings. So this is one aspect. Removing darkness by illumination and stimulating feelings. So the acharyas, it's a slight repeat of a nice point. They are explaining that as the moon and Shard Purnima remove the darkness of night and illuminated the whole landscape, the landscape of Vrindavan on this particular night was like a paradisical scene, paradise. It was like paradise. The perfect place, Kaladeshan Patra, the perfect place, perfect time, and perfect persons. The supreme, all-perfect personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and the supreme, all-perfect personality of servitors or divine devotees, Premi Bhaktas, the Braja Gopis. So everything was perfectly arranged by Krishna's Yoga Maya Shakti and all these contributive and elements like the moon, the wind, the fragrant flowers, the sandy beach, the Yamuna, all these wonderful factors to create the ideal setting for what? For a cricket match? No, the ideal setting for a love story, for a romantic, a sacred love story in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the heart of Krishna. And Krishna's heart is Vrindavan. So love goes on in the heart. In Krishna's heart, Radha's dancing. And Radha's heart, Krishna's in dancing, is dancing. And the heart of all surrendered souls, all Radha Krishna Bhaktas, worshippers of Radha and Krishna, Radha and Krishna Yuga are both dancing there, dancing in the heart. As Hanuman, Bhakta Hanuman, Dasyarathi Hanuman, he showed his Ishtadev, his Antaryami. Was Narayan, had Narayan gone in his heart? Was Chaturbhuj Narayan or Vishnu in Hanuman's heart? Look, dekho, kulo. He opened his chest and everyone saw Sita Ram, Antaryami. Ramchandra became the Antaryami Bhagavan. He entered the heart because he's a Dasirati Bhakta, pure servant of Ramchandra Bhagavan. So for the pure servants of Radha and Krishna, if you were to open their heart, when you do heart surgery, you'll see Radha and Krishna, Trimangalalitam, Niyata Prakasham, Shamasundaram, Madaram Shamasundaram, playing his flute and Radharani offering tambal or dancing, playing veena. This is the heart of the devotee. So the acharyas say, as the moon illuminates and removes the darkness, when one is bathing, when one is standing face to face with the full moon of Krishna consciousness, or the full moon of enlightenment, the full moon of illumination in God consciousness, Radha Krishna's spiritual consciousness, then what happens when you're standing facing God, standing before the light of God? Then that moonlight of Krishna Chandra's Prabhav, his Kripa, his love, his service, his seva, his remembrance, it removes all the darkness of ignorance is removed from our hearts. All the selfish material desires are dissolved and burned up. And all the independent notions and independent desires to enjoy or exploit this world without any connection or service to God, they're all removed. And one becomes comforted. As the verse says, Shucho Mrijan. It says that it removed, the moon rays removed lamentation. Shucha. Remove lamentation from everyone's heart and remove the darkness from everyone's heart so the gopis could run. They were lamenting in separation from Krishna. So when one becomes God conscious, Krishna conscious, then all his lamentation is removed and all the darkness is removed and all the darkness of independent, the filthy desires, the material desires, and all the ungodly things that are dancing in our heart become removed. First they're revealed. Krishna reveals when our consciousness expands under the rays of Krishna's mercy, then our bad qualities and our wrong desires and our wayward thinking or upside down thinking becomes revealed. Oh, first the doctor discovers your disease, then he gives the cure. Then you follow the remedial measure and attain health and success and happiness. So the light of Krishna consciousness reveals our anarthas, unwanted things, reveals our attachments to body, family, society, greed, anger, lust. That's the disease, ridrogam kamam. So Krishna's moonshine illuminates that. Oh, I thought I was so great. I thought I was so perfect, so peaceful, so godly. But actually, there's a lot of dirt inside my mind. There's a lot of ungodly desires beating on my brain and heart. Now I see them. Oh, I'm not so healthy as I thought I was. I thought I'm physically healthy and mentally okay, but spiritually I'm diseased. God is far away and I'm in this world very much deeply entrenched and attached. So that's the first illumination of Krishna's moonshine. And then gradually all that ignorance is dispelled. And then our true self arises, the Atma Jyoti, the light, the inner light. There's the outer light of the moonshine and the spiritual outer light of Krishna Chandra, which finally unveils the true Atma, Sat-Chit-Ananda Vigraha. I am eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. That's my svabhav, that's my nature, Nitya svabhav. So then what happens is that God's light of Kripa and Prema and Seva opens our heart, removes the covering of darkness and ignorance and material desires from our heart and mind, and then the natural light of the soul shines forth. It's called Atma Jyoti. And if one is Mayavad or Advaitin, then that Atma Jyoti has the scintillating effulgence of Brahman. One becomes very effulgent. But if one is a Bhakta, Ram Bhakta, Krishna Bhakta, when the Atma is opened and revealed, that Atma Jyoti is Atma Prem Jyoti. My Gurudev, He went to America and he initiated and trained many Western people, young adults, young men and women, 20, 25 years old. He initiated them and trained them in Krishna Bhakti, Bhakti Yoga, Radha Krishna worship, Radha Krishna Upasana. And when they came to Prabhupada, they were regular modern people, educated, working, and they were enjoyers like everyone in the world today, enjoying their senses, Americans, wealthy, educated, beautiful, handsome, enjoying like anything. And their faces, everyone's faces looked so dark. There was no Atma Jyoti. It was only Kam Jyoti, Krodh Jyoti, the light of calm, the light of anger, light of envy, and greed. And these aren't very high wattage bulbs. Greed, anger, lust, they're like 0 watts. 0 watt light bulb. 10 watt light bulb. It's not Atma Jyoti. It's just some kind of sparkling 0 watt light bulb of our mental desires. So the faces look dull, not really effulgent, despite how much makeup you put on. So then Prabhupada initiate everyone in sattva gun, sattva har, Krishna prasad, mantra, arti, puja, 4 regulative principles, live a pure life, pure mind, pure habits, pure food, everything. Spiritual, offered to God, connected with God, yoga. And gradually everyone became, the Atma Jyoti became revealed, and everyone's face became so bright and so joyful. Their faces became bright with the light of Atma Prem Jyoti. And Seva, Guru Seva, Vaishnava Seva, Krishna Seva. And the proof, my Gurudev was riding, Srila Prabhupada was on an airplane flying somewhere, and one man sat next to him. He said, "What is your name?" And he said, "My name is Swami Bhaktivedanta." He said, "Oh, are you Srila Prabhupada?" I said, "Yes, my students, they call me that." He said, "I've met you founded ISKCON." "Yes, I've met your students. I've seen your students. I'm an international businessman. I'm flying to Paris and London and Germany and Heidelberg and Switzerland. And I see everywhere members of your society that are practicing this bhakti yoga. And Swamiji, I must say, their faces are very effulgent. They're glowing, they're shining. And these are the same young people, the same faces that were dull, darkened and dull, full of anxiety, tension, lamentation, hankering, craving. Now they're prasannatma. They're prasannatma. They're joyful and peaceful. So this is the effect of the soothing moon rays of Krishna consciousness or spiritual realization, spiritual illumination. It's a very nice in one Acharya says, in the loving exchanges between the gopis and Sri Krishna, the gopis in this Rasalila, they surround Krishna just like the stars surrounding the moon. There's the moon and all the stars in all directions. So the gopis surround Krishna, and their loving exchanges are all based on surrender, service, dedication, mutual harmony, giving, taking, more all giving and no taking. There's one phrase they say in the material world, they say, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Or sometimes they say, all to lose, nothing to gain. Sometimes this phrase is there when people are in a negative mind in the material world. They say, all to lose and nothing to gain. I sacrifice my whole life for material pursuits, and when I get old and die, what do I gain? I gain a rebirth. Janma, mrityu, jaravyadi, again janma. But in spiritual life, nothing to lose, all to gain. This is spiritual life. Nothing to lose means you don't lose anything valuable. You don't lose your actual identity when you take out spiritual life. So this is one message that he's saying that there's interesting, one Acharya is telling that it's not for us, it's an analogy, it's just some imagery here. Not that we take this as Siddhanta or something we should do. But in this description from Bhagavad, we see that full moon is rising and his face, it's a reddish moon. So the analogy here is that the kare, the hands or the rays of the moon, it seem to be, the moon's rising in the eastern direction. The eastern direction, Purva Dig, is Indrakapatni, the wife of Indradev. So when you look in the eastern direction, when the moon is rising, different times of the year, the moon is reddish, glowing white and with a reddish orange tint, and the whole eastern sky is like that. So the verse says, when the king, the moon planet, rose in the sky, he colored the eastern direction. He put with his hands, the hands of his moon rays. It's an analogy, a figure of speech. With his hands of his moon rays, he colored the face of the eastern direction with Arunena Kunkum, with red color. So that's what they say, colored the wife. And then just like a husband coloring the face of his wife upon returning. So because Krishna is in the Chandravamsh, Krishna appears in Chandravamsh, and he's a follower, Bhagavan Sri Krishna is a follower of Chandravamsh. He's born at midnight on Janmashtami, Rohini Nakshatra, on Bhadramas. So therefore, yad yad acharati shrestas, tat tat evetarojana, sa yat pramanam kurute, lokas tat anavartate. Krishna should follow the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna should follow the Bhagavad Gita. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, yad yad acharati shrestas. Whatever a great, Krishna tells Arjuna in Gita, whatever a great man does, acharya shreshta, an exemplary man, a leader, a proper spiritual leader, a virtuous leader, religious leader, whatever a great man does, a common man should follow in his footsteps. Mama vartmano vartante. And Arjuna, ultimately, everyone follows mama vartma, anuvartate. Everyone follows my path one way or the other. Whether they're going down the tamagun marg, or vartma, or rajagun, or sattvagun, or vishuddha sattva. And that path, if you take the road to San Francisco, you go to San Francisco. You take the road to hell, you go to hell. You take the road to heaven, you go to heaven. You take the road to Pitri Loka, Bhutloka, you go there with the ghosts and spirits and relatives, ancestors. And you take the road to Swarga, you go there. Mama vartmano vartante, Gita. Anuvartante, anuvartante. Step by step, they follow my path. So, Chandradev, he's Sura, demigod, devotee, Vishnu Kabakta. Chandradev, he's a Brahmin. So he's an Acharya Shrestha. He's the best of humans. Someone to be followed, someone to be emulated and worshipped, Chandra Puja. So the Acharyas say, he's showing the example. Chandradev is saying to Krishna, hey, Krishna, you're my follower. I'm the head of the dynasty. I'm the head of our dynasty. I'm your great-grandfather, in a figure of speech. Chandradev is the head of the Chandravamsh dynasty of the moon god. So listen, like father, like son, I'm putting red color on the wife, somebody else's wife, so you're my follower, you're on Chandravamsh. You should also find somebody else's wife and rub red color on her face and see how she likes it. The stars are twinkling so brightly in the eastern direction, so happy when I do that. And people feel so comforted. Why don't you try that? Then Krishna thinks, that's a good idea, Chandradev. I think I'll do that. Oh, where can I find the wives of other men? Okay. Vamshidari. Krishna Murari. He plays his Vamshi Murali, and so many wives come. He runs out of kunkum. He runs out. He doesn't have enough kunkum to color all their faces. So, okay. Oh, Swamiji said, I heard the class. He said, Swamiji said, I heard we should go to the wives of other men and rub kunkum on their faces. That's not what is being said by the Acharyas. By the Acharya Shrestha, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Rasik Jan, Rasik Vaishnava, they're not saying that. This is alaukik lila, and this is an analogy or comparison, because Krishna is going to do that anyway, whether or not the moon does it or not. Because Krishna is the guru of the moon, and everyone, Adi Guru Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So this is a very nice point. And in relation to this point, that he's a god, Chandradev, you say Dev, Chandradev, Indradev, Suryadev, Varundev. They're gods, they're powerful Ishvaras. They're not Param Ishvara, but they are powerful Ishvaras. They're Ishvara, but Param Ishvara Eki, Swayam Bhagavan. But they've been delegated and appointed power of attorney to, given their powers from Bhagavan, to rule and control and provide and maintain the universe and the people and objects and living entities in it. So they are, because they're so powerful, because they're so great and valuable and important for us, they are worshipable. They're like gods for us. Just like when a king comes out into his country, into his kingdom, everyone stands up and they offer puja and they offer arti as he walks from here to there. You see in Jagannath Puri, they still have some idea in Orissa, Oriya, of this Odia, whatever they say now, Orissa, that the king is worshipable. He's the, in Sanskrit, they say the Raja, the Samrat, the king is called Naradeva. Naradeva. Nara means human beings. So he's Naradeva. He's the king of the humans. So when the Gajapati Raj, Divya Dev Singh, the present name of Gajapati Raj, means the lord of elephants, because you have to be a king to have hundreds of elephants. I mean, one elephant costs 5 lakhs and it costs 1 lakh a year to feed them or something. So he says, Gajapati Raj, Sri Divya Dev Singh. So he's called Divya Dev Singh. He's a Dev, he's Naradeva. So when he comes on his palanquin for the Rath Yatra in July, Jagannath Ji's Rath Yatra, everyone stands up. They're so happy. They feel natural desire to stand up and show respects and worship him because he's such a senior person in terms of his position and exaltation. So Chandradeva is to be worshipped, they're telling. So he's practically a powerful god. So therefore, by mentioning this word Uttaraj, that the god, the king, the god of the stars, the lord and the king of the stars, Chandradeva, Uttaraj, that he's rubbing kunkum on the eastern direction, the Pratya Vilimpan, on the eastern direction he's rubbing kunkum, then that signifies that this Leela, Ras Leela, is extraordinary. It's a godly Leela. It's a divine Leela. It's a Leela sanctioned by the gods. And for this reason, we can't relegate the Ras Leela to some mundane dance of a materialistic man or woman or boy or girl of this world. It's not Lokic at all. It's by this, because of the position of Chandra, and he's doing something similar, and now Krishna may do something similar. So this is for Leelas for the gods or for the higher beings. This is one point we're saying. Now we want to begin with this second phrase here. Tadodharaja kakuba karer mukam. I mentioned briefly about this. Karer mukam pratya. It means, because I mentioned this point in a few lectures earlier, how in the Vedic conception, the conception of Veda Darshan, the viewpoint of the rishis, the munis, Narada Muni and Vasishtha Muni, and all the great Valmiki Muni, all the great munis and rishis and sages of India, their view was personal consciousness. Everything, everywhere. There's no such thing as there are atoms and elements and compounds. Anu is a Sanskrit word for atom. But ultimately, the background and the substratum of all reality, whether it's tangible reality or intangible, whether it's physical or it's metaphysical, or whether it's living or sentient and living or non-living and non-sentient, matter or spirit, the background, the substratum of everything in creation, from the Indragopa to Lord Indra, from the Indragopa Kita or insect up to Lord Brahma, is personal consciousness. Everything is personal. The water is personal consciousness. The land is personal consciousness. The air is personal consciousness. The flowers, the birds, the trees, everything is personal. Atma, a person, individuality. Eko Bahu Sham. Krishna is one and he expands his consciousness in unlimited forms and spheres of influence and experience and leela. unlimited forms of God in the material world and unlimited planets, and unlimited forms of Bhagavan in the spiritual world with unlimited planets and unlimited forms of devotees. This is Ananta Bhagavan, unlimited. So this whole verse is about the moon planet, which ostensibly the moon planet is a grand, it's just a planet. And they take pictures and it appears like some desert with moon craters and whatever they try to say, the scientists. And it emanates a cooling glow and whatever. But this verse is saying the moon planet has hands. He's a king. He's not just an insentient or non-human thing, like planet, an object. It's just a planet. It's a person. The planet is a person. The planet and a person has consciousness and movement. And will and feelings. These are the attributes of consciousness. Free will, movement, feelings, interaction, lila. So the moon is not a planet, it's a person. It's not a grahan, the moon is a purusha, person. Who is it? Chandradev, and that's his effulgence. So he has hands. And this eastern direction was always the eastern direction, purva dig. No, the eastern direction is personal consciousness. The dig is chit maya, personal consciousness, the air. So the moon, with his reddish rays, as he's rising in Sharad Purnima, he's with the hands of his rays, karai, says, kakuba karer mukam. The eastern pratya, he's the eastern horizon, as he's rising, and he's reddish and glowing red, he also has a prabhav. I'm red and I make everyone red. I'm angry, I'll make everyone angry. I'm full of love, I'll fill everyone with love. I'm full of happiness, I'll make everyone happy, joyful. So he's full of red coloring. So then he colors the entire eastern sky with the hands of his rays, karer. Karer in Sanskrit means hands. We say hat. Hands are his rays. He reaches out and covers the face of the eastern direction, mukam. When we say face, we generally mean human being, man or woman, or maybe the face of a dog, the face of a cat. Usually the term is used with people. So now, not only does the eastern direction have a face, but she's a Devi. She has a face and hair and hands and everything, a full form. Not just he's coloring her face, but there's more than just a face to a human body. There's a head, face, everything. And then this Devi, this personified eastern direction who has consciousness and personality, she has ras, she has relationships, because that's the nature of consciousness. Active personal consciousness is active, moves, has relationships, ras, sambandha. So the eastern direction has a relationship with whom? Her husband. So the whole analogy here is about madhurya. It's about conjugal love, amorous love. The moon planet is flirting with Indra's wife. Chandradev is flirting very intimately with Indradev's wife. He's actually touching her face with red kumkum. And it's not recommended. Don't do it. Don't even think about doing it. And certainly don't buy any kumkum. So then you may think about it. So this is a very nice point. Here, how this, the personality aspect, and everything's personal. But what happens now in the present age? As you see, as all these inventions and gadgets and palm tops and laptops and A phone and B phone and C phone, so many types of phones, and we have all kinds of so-called conveniences, which are machines. We surround ourselves with machines. We interact every moment with machines. We always think about machines, purchase machines. We always talk about machines. So then what do we come? Because a man is judged by his association. A man takes on the characteristics of his association. If you're a good man and you associate with a gunda, not a good man, you're a good man and you associate with a gunda or a badmash, he'll corrupt you. He'll contaminate you. He'll make you a bad man. Hey, why are you a good man? Drink some whiskey. Come on, let's go rob this house. Come on, it's fun. Boom, boom, shpoom. So we take on the qualities of our association, just like a sputika, a crystal. A crystal takes on the color of the object next to it. If you have a red ball of glass next to a clear crystal, the crystal will appear red. If it's blue, it'll appear red. So our consciousness changes colors. Our consciousness, our attitude, our viewpoint changes colors and viewpoints according to our association. Good association brings us up, promotes our good qualities. Bad association pushes us down and magnifies and increases our bad qualities. So this point here is that the moon is, he's coloring with his hands, he's personal. This is the first point, and everything's personal. We're trying to establish that. So in the dealings with everyone, we should be very personal. I was making this analogy, which I lost for a second. But everywhere, so the philosophy is, if you, whatever you associate with, you take on the qualities. This is a principle, and it's real. It's true. Surround yourself with good thoughts. Surround yourself with good people. Surround yourself with divine and good places. And eat only good food. What will happen to you? You'll become good. You'll become pure. You'll become sattvic. You'll become religious. By association. Everyone knows this principle. You want to be an acer in school, then you surround yourselves with drunkards and smokers, right? No. Wrong. If you want to be an acer or a topper in school, you surround yourself with good association, which means people are in a class above you, and they become your tutors. You get these assistants, these more learned men and women or, that help you understand a subject and promote, give you good association, give you good guidance, give you good recommendations and ideas, and improve your knowledge of the subject and improve your qualities in relation to that subject. It's a practical experience of everyone looking at me today. So this is the proof that association can improve you or destroy you. So be careful about whom you choose to associate with. So I'm saying that we go to bed with machines. Sometimes we go to bed not with our wife, but with our telephone. Our wife is in the other room, but we may sleep in a different room from our wife time to time because there's an argument or fight or whatever, or you're following some religious path. But you'll never sleep in a different room from your cell phone. Cell phone, I'm angry with you. You stay in the living room. I'm sleeping alone tonight. Oh, woo, woo. The phone will cry. Oh, please take me with you. At least keep me under your pillow. So we sleep with machines, and we wake up with a machine. Ba-ding, ding-dong-dong, 6 o'clock. Ding-dong, ching-dong-bong, 7 o'clock. Or you put your favorite tune in there. Ha ta tum 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 ta 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 tum tum ta ha ha ha. Ah, 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 ah. Coffee, please, tea. Machines, machines, machines. Go to bed with a machine, wake up machine, cook your breakfast with a microwave oven, drive in a machine, work in a machine all day at school. I mean at work and school. And talk about machines and buy machines and look at magazines on machine and go on the internet and find a new machine and a better machine. So what do we become? We become mechanical beings. We become extensions of our machines. We don't know how to talk to each other like persons. I don't have any time to talk to you. I'm busy playing games. Pop, 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 beep, pop, beep, pop, beep, pop. Girls don't play with, little children don't play anymore. They don't come out to the playgrounds. They don't go to each other's houses. Oh, please come to my house. Let's play some checkers. Let's play some board game. No, no, I got it all on my computer. Why should I come to your house? I have my own opponent. I get on my computer. I have five guys on my palm top. There's me and three other people. And I fight this one, that one. You're only one person. If I come to your house, I can only fight with one. I have five on my... This is insanity. And the whole world is going insane. Everyone's becoming mechanical and impersonal. Not personal. Just the opposite of the Vedic view. Just the opposite of the view of the darshan, Veda darshan, Gita darshan, Bhagavad darshan. Just the opposite. Krishna has no machines. Krishna doesn't have any machines. In Vrindavan, he has hands and feet and cow dung and cows and flute and veena and rivers and trees and friends and lovers and mothers. They eat together. They play together. They sleep together. They don't have time for machines. And Krishna, he has no place for machines, no need for machines, and no time for machines. Now, look at the converse. Look at our situation. We have no time for each other. No room for each other. And we only need machines. I need machines. Cook, eat. I dry my hair with a machine. Brush my teeth with electric thing. Shave with electric razor. Unbelievable. Iron my clothes with electric thing. The iron. Heat up my tea with a special tea cooker, electric tea cooker. Then cook my food with a microwave. Then have an automatic thing, boing, opens my garage door, because it's so heavy to lift the door, you know. So people have no muscles, no heart, and no brain. Everything's in the machine. I can't add 1, 2, 3. This is the modern age. Sad as it sounds, true as it is. So you can choose your path. You can live the mechanistic, live in machines. You can choose the mechanistic, machine-oriented lifestyle, which turns you into a machine, makes you mechanical in your dealings, speaking, acting, thinking, impersonal, isolated, alienated, solitude, and unhappiness, disappointment, anxiety, tension, and frustration. A life of unfulfillment. That's what machines will give you. People, surround yourself with real people, good people. Speak with them, play with them, meet with them, discuss with them. And your life will be filled with fulfillment and peace and joy and happiness. A machine cannot give you love. A machine cannot give you inner happiness or peace of mind. It can only agitate your mind, especially when it breaks right in your hand. Ding, 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 boink! It's broken. Cost 49,000 rupees. Love never breaks. People don't break. Hearts break time to time. So the Vedic view, this verse is telling us, Udaraja, Tado, Udaraja, Kokuba, Karer, Mukham. This one line opens up the whole gamut of the Vedic perspective. The living, personal, human, love-based, God, love-based, person-based, God-based society of the ancient India and the real ancient world. That the moon has rays, everyone knows the moon has rays. But did you know the moon has hands? And everyone knows the eastern direction. Did you know the eastern direction has a face? Huh? Yeah. Do you know the eastern direction is a Devi? She's Purva Devi? Do you know she's married? Acha. She's married to Indradev. He's the lord of rain. So everything becomes personal, becomes intimate. Hey, the sun is my friend. Hey, Suryadev. Om Suryaye Namah, please accept this tarpan. You're my friend. Be nice to me like a friend. A friend is nice to me. Make me healthy. Make me happy. Oh Chandra, please help me. We're surrounded by friends. The whole and everywhere around us. In the sky, on the land, in the sea, in the trees, in the beasts, the animals. All are friends. All are personal. All are God's creatures and expansions. And they're all emanating love and benefit and kindness. And what do we do to show our gratitude? We annihilate them. I read somewhere in one magazine, it said, every day one species of life becomes eliminated, goes extinct on the planet Earth because of human beings. We came to Vrindavan, moved here in 1987. And there's these huge birds called vulture. And they would come and by the Yamuna and some dead animal, they'd land there and clean up all the dead flesh so no one gets diseases and all these plagues and all these things. That was their food, dead animals. They were like scavengers, very helpful because a dead animal lies there, so many maggots and disease, people can get plague and all kinds of wipe out the people. So it's God's arrangement. Now there's no more vultures, as everyone knows. This gid has been eliminated from the Indian subcontinent. This is a fact. I'm only here since 25 years. One bird I was seeing all the time. Someone's about to die in their house. They say it's an omen. It's a chinna that someone is about to die in that house or someone just died. And I've seen it practically. I was living in one mandir in my Gurudev's kuti, and someone in the room next to me died that night. When I went out to the morning for a Jamuna snan, I saw this vulture. I mean, they make a big orbit. It's quite a big circle because they're way up there. But somehow they know what's going on down here. And he's basically orbiting above the kuti and the mandir where I was staying. And I was thinking, oh, I was told by the villagers, this is a bad omen. Someone's about to die or they just died. And they're still in the house dead, haven't been cremated yet. So then I came back from Snan. Ah, ah, everyone's crying. Room right next to mine. And that person, the man, he sat down in that morning to do his anik, his Sandhya Vandanam, his morning prayers, Gayatri. Om Bhur Bhavakswa. And then he died. He's simply sitting there, meditating on Vishnu, Krishna, and he died. I guess what you call a peaceful death. So then they took him to the Yamuna and they cremated him. So this bird is completely eliminated. How? Because there's some chemicals that the scientists have created, very nice chemicals, and they inject them into the buffalo, the base, buffalo, especially buffalo, some kind of chemical that they put inside the buffalo injection to do something, whatever, I don't know what. So now, when that buffalo dies his death, natural death, and he may be discarded or dies wherever, and the vultures land and start eating his flesh, that poison goes into the vulture. Then when the females started laying their eggs, in a very short time, somehow that poison that they were eating for the last 25 years that I'm here, ingesting this poison from the dead animal, dead buffalo, it affected their genetic structure somewhat. So when the female vulture laid her eggs, the little baby bird, baby bacha, pucky bacha, the shell, what we call, supposed to be eggshell, a little bit hard, like an eggshell. It was like rubber. It was like polythene, taily. It was just like jello. So she would lay her egg, and then inside that egg, that hard shell, was the living entity, was the baby bird, and would just melt into the nest. There was no hard casing, no shell. So within a few years, no more babies, no more vultures. All over India. This is a fact. You can ask any Parsis. Ask Parsis about it, Parsi people. Because the vultures, I think they, part of their religion, is it right? They give their the dead bodies, they offer, somehow in their religious rites, they offer to the vulture to finish. So now they have to start cremating. In Mumbai and all over India, the Parsis, when they die, they like a regular Hindu cremation, they cremate the body and bury the bhasma, ashes. Because there's no, so we've upset the natural arrangement. This is our result of our mechanical, impersonal, unconscious, blind civilization. This is one example of one species dead and gone, never to return. And according to the scientists and their newspapers, it's not in the Vedas, every single day, somewhere on the planet, some species gets eliminated because of man's pollution, inventions, etc. And up until the last 100 years, all these thousands and thousands of species were alive and well, very much extant. Now they're extinct. Extant means living, existing, and extinct means no more. So this is the end result of mechanistic living, machine thinking, machine living, that we destroy everything on the planet and ultimately destroy ourselves. So this verse is about personality, and everything's personal, so it points us in that direction. And let's go on to the next phrase here in the verse. It says, Tadoduraja kakuba karera mukham prachyavi limpan aranena shantame. So the translation is, that the moon colored the face of the eastern direction. Vilimpan means to smear or to rub or wipe this aronena, reddish color, shamtame. Like we say shamak, we say pitta shamak, or if shamak means to pacify, if we have some pitta rog or vata rog, or cough rogue, disease of our physical bodies in the Ayurvedic system, or too much increase of our fire in the body, then they do pitta shamak. They give pitta shamak dawa, or oshadi, to pacify, to reduce the increase in fire, to reduce it. So this word there in Sanskrit, it says shantame, and the Sanskrit is shantame. His rays give great comfort. So the moon rays, the full moon rays in Sharad Purnima, they're very cooling, as moon rays always are. And in autumn time in Vrindavan, it's very hot in a day. It's actually September, it's very, very hot. The rainy seasons are finished. Now it's very, very hot before Kartik. So this, when the moon rays come, they give a very comforting. They reduce the heat of the day, the pitta. The earth is excess pitta, too much fire in people's bodies. So the moon rays come, they cool off our mind, they cool off the body, and they cool off the gopis' minds. Because Krishna's mind is burning with attraction for Radha and the gopis, and the gopis' minds are burning with attraction. That anticipation of love, that initial attraction, that purva raga is rising like a fire. So now, when the moon rays, the physical moon, Udaraj, is cooling the whole landscape and all the people within it. And the transcendental moon of Krishna Chandra, Udaraj Sri Krishna, is cooling the star-like gopis, cooling their minds and relieving their shucha. It says here in the next verse, Sacharshaninam Udagach Chucho Mrijan. So this word, Sacharshaninam Udagach Chucho Mrijan, it explains shucha, which becomes chucho in Sanskrit, means lamentation or unhappiness. And mrijan means, we say marjan, or poch, what do you say, ponchan, to wash or to clean. So marjanando. So it says in Sanskrit that he wiped away, he removed those soothing, cooling rays, charshaninam. Everyone who watched the moon rise, because everyone knows in North India, after a hot summer day, when in the Shukla Paksha time, the bright moon time of the month, 15 days, people go out on the roofs and sleep on their charpai, on the chat, on the rooftop, or they go out in the yard, they go for a stroll in the neighborhood, and they feel those cooling rays, and they feel very comforted, shantamai. And all their shucha all becomes marjan. All their lamentation, oh, it's so hot, I'm really lamenting, I can't bear these hot, scorching days of autumn and this time of the year. So then when the moon comes, that says, charshaninam, everyone who watched the moon rise, they felt comforted, free from their anxiety and lamentation. Now, what to speak about the gopis? Because ultimately, the verse is about Krishna and the gopis. When they saw the moon, they thought, oh, they had anticipation. This is the first level of love, anticipation. So they thought, oh, maybe tonight, because Krishna said in the future nights, oh, gopis, in the future nights, I will enjoy with you. The gopis are anticipating how this reddish full moon affects their minds when they see it. Their anticipation of meeting Krishna rises in leaps and bounds. Maybe tonight is that wonderful night. So then it says, Aranena Shantamai. So Vishnu Chakravarti, he gives a comment on this word Aronena, Arun. Arun means that pinkish, reddish color in the sky when the sun rises, or in this case, at moonrise. So Vishnu Chakravarti, he says that this analogy is like when lovers are separated for some time, then I don't think it goes on much today. If the husband goes to China for 10 days on business and comes back, I don't imagine too many modern husbands are taking kumkum powder and putting on their wives' faces. Why don't they do that? Why husbands, after being long separated to family matters or health or business, they may be away from their wives, visiting relatives in Europe or whatever, husbands. Why, in old days of India, and this scripture is based on reality, this was the reality of husbands and wives, and it's, of course, about Krishna's Leela. So when we read it, we say, oh, yes, that sounds familiar. Krishna is having Nara Leela, human-like pastimes. And this reminds me, oh, I sometimes go traveling for business. I come back. I'm so happy to see my wife. She's so dressed up and so happy to see me. So then, in the elation of our meeting, celebrating the joy of our reunion, then I take some kumkum and affectionately and lovingly rub it on her cheeks as a sign of acceptance and love and appreciation. Because why we don't, someone says, oh, what is this? I never heard of that. I never saw my father do that to my mother. And he goes to China for 2 weeks, and I certainly would never do it to my wife. Why? Because now we are machines and not persons. We're impersonal, not personal. Our affection is simply a show for business purposes. It's not genuine affection based on deep love and affection. This is one point. So he said, so when you hear these analogies or these metaphors, you think, what is this? I never... But this was reality in this human society, and what to speak in Krishna's Nara Leela, which are his human-like pastimes here in this earth planet and also in the spiritual world. So he's saying that as the moon is showing Krishna the example, the moon is greeting the eastern horizon, the wife of the eastern horizon, and he greets her, he's appearing and he greets her by putting kunkum on her face. So he's telling, listen, Krishna, when you go to meet Radharani, you should also rub kunkum on her face. When you play the flute tonight on Sharad Purnima and you call her out for the rasa dance, you should also, like I'm doing, you should rub some kunkum. She'll be very happy and she'll look more beautiful. Her beautiful Anana, her beautiful face will become so enhanced by the application of that Aronena, which means kunkum. Kunkum powder is often translated. It's a bright reddish powder. It's often translated by translators as saffron, what we call keshar. But actually, kunkum is not really keshar. It's something else. It's some powder that surrounds the seeds. There's a particular tree that comes in the family of nariyal, like coconut and tambul. Tambul, coconut, they're the same. They're all palm trees, a type of what we call palm trees. Date palms, coconut palm, and then there's tambul. What do they call the tambul? What's it called? Sapari, there's another name for betel. Betel nut. The betel nut, there's something in English we call betel nut tree. I think you call it sapari or something like that. Tambul. So the betel nut tree is in the palm family, and so is this tree kunkum. If it has a flower, then the flower makes a seed. Then inside the seed pod, there's little red powder, natural red powder. That's actually kunkum. So when you see all these hand trucks and trolleys with piles of red powder, it's all chemicals. It's red arsenic. It's lead arsenic or other different red powders. It's not really kunkum. Kunkum is created by God. It's a powder inside a seed pod of a type of palm tree. I saw it once in Orissa. Someone showed me. And I was quite amazed. Very colorful, very bright, and very fragrant. So that's the real thing. And I suppose to buy 10 grams of that, if you could get it, would cost about 5 lakhs. So we better be happy with our arsenic powder. The collecting of that substance, the producing it, the growing it, is to supply the needs of India, you'd have to have... All of Australia would have to be covered with kunkum trees. The amount of kunkum that gets utilized around here. So in the West, we have mascara and all kinds of nice chemicals we plaster on our eyelids and faces and things. But the Krishna and the gopis, they don't use some type of chemicals. So it's very beautiful. So this is, he should do the same with his wife as lovers too. And of course, kunkum has many, many other statements that we don't find here. But kunkum appears in many places in the Bhagavatam, and many, actually I'll tell that's tomorrow, that part. This is a slight mention of kunkum, but I was getting ahead here. So this is just, because it says Aronena. Aronena just means red sky, pinkish reddish sky that appears at sunrise and also at moonrise, is coincidentally enough. At certain times when the moon rises or the sun rises, the sky is very pink in the morning, and very attractive. Like the face, a lady's face when it's golden skin and a little slightly tinged red, or the pink on the bottom of the feet, the natural reddish color on some individuals. Now there's a very interesting phrase here in this verse 29:2, we establish that Charshaninam, everyone who watched that moonrise, then what happens? Their shocha, their lamentation, their unhappiness, their sadness was removed and wiped away by the soothing, cooling effect of the moon rays. So one can draw from this for the adhyatmic vichar, me, atma, my mind, my body, my soul. What lesson, what do I get from this? Is that if that we are also being scorched, we are being burned by the fire, the fire of our desires. It's described in Sanskrit, there's the word tap. Tap means penance, austerity, but tap means fire, like Agni, fire. So calm, lusty material desires and greed are a type, in Sanskrit, described as a type of tap, a fire, the fire of desire. Have you ever heard an expression like that? The person has a hot head, he's very hot-headed, he's very passionate, he's very angry. That's tap, fire. So he has too much pitta. He needs pitta shamak. So this fire of our desires, when this soothing, and we were lamenting. So many people are lamenting. They lose something, you lament. Everyone in this world has had something in their hand and lost it. No one has something in their hand. No one in this world can say, I never lost anything. Whatever I have, I never lost. Did you lose your youth? Remember when you're young and vibrant and beautiful? You lost that. Right? If you're 40 years old, you can say, oh no, whatever came in my hand, I held on to it, I never lost it. I was 16 years old, I was 18 years old. I was so handsome, so beautiful. And see, I still look like I'm 16, right? No, not really. Look like you're 96. Think you're 96. So I lost it. I lost my youth. Sometimes we lose our wealth. Sometimes we lose our job. No, you never lose your job? So many times. It's hard to keep a job these days. Even if you're a good worker and dutiful and on time, then the boss says, oh, we're having a cutback. There's too much slump in the market. You're a great soul, but now you have to find another job because we don't need any more cameramen for our television. Well, thank you very much. I gave you my whole life for 15 years. Blood, sweat, tears, everything. On time, every day. Cheerful, dutiful, expert. And now after 15 years you say, bye, you're fired. This is loss. This is the material world. All loss and no gain. So when this full moon of Krishna consciousness, of the light of the illumination and mercy of God shines, then the shochan, the unhappiness, everything goes away. All that fire in our brain. We become cool-headed. The word in Sanskrit is dhira. We become dhira. Very cool-headed, peaceful, calm. Because we understand that no matter how hard I work or how hard I endeavor, ultimately the result is in God's hand. This is the basic, one basic teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Do your karma, do your work, do your dharma and your karma, but the success is not in our hands. No one works hard to fail. I'm going to get a job and work really hard so I go bankrupt. I'm really going to work hard, open this business and work very, very hard so every month I go in the red, then I have to fold and foreclose and get arrested because I can't pay back my bank loan. Everyone wants to be successful, but who's successful? At least according to their wants. So the success is in the hands of God. So the bhakta, he becomes cool-headed. Shama, it says, the word here says, shucha mrijan, that Krishna wipes away all the lamentation. He doesn't lament over the past. What was is past, what is won't last. At all times, be steadfast, chant Hare Krishna, and have a blast. That deals with the past, present, and future. No lamentation. What me worry? For the older set. So this is this Sacharshaninam Udagach Chuchomrijan. Udagach Uto Uto. When everyone saw that moonrise, then all their lamentation was Mrijan, Poncha, was all wiped away. So when everyone saw the moonrise of God consciousness rise in the heart and mind of his friend, then they saw, along with the rising of the moon and the illumination of God consciousness and the presence of God in a person's mind and life, they became illuminated, they became pacified, they became free from lamentation, and they became happy. That's what the verse is saying. Shamei, shamei, shamak. They became shanti, very peaceful. So now the next phrase, it says, very interesting phrase here. Tadoduraja kakuba karer mukham pratya vilimpan naronena shantame sacharshaninam udagach chucho mrijan priya priyaya eva dirga darshanaha priya priyaya. This means persons. Personal viewpoint, a priya and a priyaya, priyaya, priya priyatam. So in this analogy, obviously, what is being said in the translation is it's just related to the same analogy of the moon anointing the eastern horizon with a reddish color, or a husband anointing the face of his wife with kumkum, and that's the connection here. This priya priyaya eva dirga darshana, dirga darshan. Means, dirga darshan means a long time. After someone's been away from their wife for a long time, their dear one for a long time, they haven't seen them, and they see them again. Darshan, dirga darshan, seeing after separation, meeting after separation, reunion after separation, coming back, reunion, rejoicing, and celebrating the event. If it's a conjugal relationship, an amorous relationship, and then there's generally, we see in the movies or we do ourselves, when a husband returns from a journey overseas for work, the wife opens the door and he runs in, he picks her up and gives her a warm embrace and swings her around and all that, like in the movies, if he has any strength. And she's not too heavy. with love. So the kumkum part, too much we don't do. But this idea, it's not priya and the priya. So here, the priya is the moon, and the priya, priyaya is are the stars, and he's rubbing kumkum on their face to welcome them and show the signs of his happiness upon return. The moon disappears every sunrise and leaves his stars behind. Then in evening, he meets again with the stars, and they have reunion. So he rejoices when the moon meets his star-like Taragan, then he rejoices. So Krishna, in the daytime, Krishna runs with the coward boys, Gochar and Leela and Sakiras, and the gopis don't see him. The starlight gopis are separated from Krishna. Then the nighttime comes, Pradosh Kal, Ratri Kal, Nisha Kal. Then the full moon of Krishna Chandra rises. He plays his flute, and the love, the full moon, the Purna Prema, the Purna Krishna praying, the full moon of Krishna's love rises in the gopis' hearts and the priyas. Sometimes we say, Priya Priyatam, Priyaji Radha, Priyatam Sham. Priyaji Shama, Priyaji Sham. The dear lover, Radharani, and her most dearly beloved Krishna, Priya Priyatam. So in this analogy here, we have Priya Priya, the moon and the stars, husband and the wife, Krishna and the gopis, Bhagavan and the Atma. Four comparisons can be drawn here, which the Acharyas do. We're simply repeating. So Priya Priyaya means, in this context of this Udipan Vibhav, description of the setting and the initiation of the dance of love, the celebration of love, Rasalila. These are more, the sky is reddish. Now what we see in this verse too, that the concept of personality is entering more into the picture. The personal concept. Verse 1, blossoming flowers, rising moon, and Krishna's mind is turned. Manasa Chakra. Rantam Manasa Chakra. It's turned. It says turn to Rantam, love. And then this verse, because in the first verse it's only Krishna and his mind is thinking of romance and love. But where are the females? Where are the wife? Where is the beloved? Now the second verse, enter the beloved. Enter the Priya and Priya. Enter a couple becomes. First verse, it's only a Nayak, 29.1. The Nayak, the hero, Krishna. Now we have a man and a woman, a Priya and a Priyaya. The king of the moon and the man and the women, the stars. And then we have Krishna, and the analogy which is understood is called Parokshava. The analogy is that the Priyaji is Radha and the Priyatam is Shyam. The Krishna moon is Krishna Chandra. The Taras are the Brajaramani Taras. The Brajaramani Taragan. All the Brajaramanis, all the eternal Nitya Premi Bhaktas, eternal lovers and consorts and associates of Krishna, Madhurya Ras, they are represented by they're the star-like, the stars of Krishna's eye. Radharani is the star in Krishna's eye. And Krishna is the moon in Radha's heart. This is the nice analogy. So Priya Priyaya. So it starts off with this idea that after a long time, Dirga Darshan, these two go together. Priya Priyaya, Iva Dirga Darshan, Shocha Mrijan. When the beloved meets the beloved after separation, what's the first thing that happens? The separation is destroyed and they have union. They're together, happy. And when they're together with the one you love, there's no lamentation, there's no unhappiness. And then, the qualifier of this whole relationship between Priya and Priyaya, the moon and the stars, or Krishna and the gopis, is Dirga Darshan. The stars in the night have not seen their husband, their Priyatam, all day. Because the sun was ruling, the sun, Surya Raj, Surya Dev, rules the sky in the daytime, and the wives of Chandra hide in shyness. The Tara, the stars, hide in shyness from Surya Dev because he's someone else's husband. Chaya Devi, and Samgya Devi are the wives of Surya Dev. So all the stars are hiding. You can't see the stars in the day because they're shy. They should not show their face before the face of the sun god, Surya Mukh. But then their husband returns after a long separation, Dirga Darshan. Aha, our husband's returned. Oh, my husband, Udaraj, Chandradev. Oh, Udaraj, Swagatam. Then they twinkle so brightly. When a wife meets her husband or a lover meets the beloved after so much separation, what twinkles? Their eyes twinkle. Their eyes twinkle and sparkle. That sparkle and twinkle of love. Have you ever experienced it? Go like this. At least when you first fell in love, when the husband first met the wife, his eyes were really twinkling. And her eyes were twinkling. Her eyes were twinkling and sending signals. I want you. I love you. I need you. Bing, bing, bing. Bing, bing, bing. And his eyes were singling. Yes, I need you. I want you. I love you. This is the eye communication. Twinkle, twinkle, twinkle. Star-like eyes. I am the star in the eye of my wife. And she is the star in mine. It's some love song. Definitely Monday. So this is the analogy. It's beautiful. Because as I mentioned, this is Madhurya Leela, Dibya Leela, transcendental pastime of sacred love of Radha Krishna and the gopis and Braj. Braja gopis. Braja Prem. Every single verse is full of Madhurya Bhav, Madhurya Ras, because this is Parama Rasa Shastra. Parama Rasa Shastra, Bhagavat Puran, Srimad Bhagavatam. Every word is full of Ras. Every word is full of Ras and meaning and flavor and pleasure and love and Prem and gopis and Radha. And satisfaction, freedom from lamentation. And so much encouragement for the conditioned souls and the sadhakas. So much encouragement and inspiration from seeing the perfect portrayal, the perfect love story, the ideal lover and the ideal beloved, and the ideal place and the ideal time, Braja Bhumi, Prem Bhumi, Sridham Vrindavan, Prem Purushottam, Shyam, and Prem Prakriti, Radha, Mahabhagavati, Radha, and Krishna, Bhagavan. This is ideal, perfect. And we have within us the desire for ideal. Every human being wants to reach or experience the ideal. Perfection in life, perfection in business, perfection in sports, perfection in relationship. I'm practicing music. Oh, I learned how to play tabla. Bumping, bump, bump. You want to be good. It's a natural drive. A natural drive of the human being is perfection. Be on the top. Be good. Be the best I can. So what about love? Loving relationships. We all look, we search, we try. Have we found the ideal love, the perfect love? If you have, then dhanyavad pranams. So now that you know how to perfectly love a material man of this world, you should be expert in learning how to perfectly love the Supreme Personality of God at Sri Krishna. Then your life will become absolutely perfect. Because if you perfectly love and have an ideal husband, ideal wife, perfect love arrangement, what will happen is you'll be perfectly attached to your wife at the time of death. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. Tyachit yanti kalevaram, tam tam aiveti konteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Krishna says in the death chapter, the marna adhyaya, Bhagavad Gita marna adhyaya, incidentally it's number 8. Chapter 8 in the Bhagavad Gita is the dying chapter, marna adhyaya, death chapter. So Krishna says, yam yam, death marna is yam yam. No, it's yam yam. Yam yam vapi, he says, remember me, smaran, Krishna smaran. Ante narayana smriti, says the Puran. Ante narayana smriti. If you don't remember God any day of your life, or any time of the day, you best remember God at that last day and last time and last minute. Hey Bhagavan, hey Krishna, hey Ram. I will save you. Otherwise that perfect marriage, and that perfect wife, and perfect husband, and perfect life, I guess. You have it? Well, if you think so, all glories. But when you'll be perfectly attached, and at the time of death, smaran, you'll think of your wife. She's so tender, so sweet, so kind. She served me for 79 years. 79 long years she served as my wife. And now, I'm holding her hand. Oh, my beloved. Oh. Then I become Stri. Admi becomes Stri, man becomes woman. This is reality. This is Bhagavad Gita. This is the truth. So, okay, have ideal husband, ideal wife, perfect loving relationship. Very good. And show your perfection and love everyone in your environment. Love your wife perfectly and love everyone in your environment perfectly. Have the ideal material society, harmony, integration, appreciation, gratitude. Plus, fully dedicate and absorb yourself in Krishna, Radha Krishna Prem Sadhana, Radha Krishna Yugal Upasana, Radha Krishna Yugal Upasana, Rag Marg, Rag Bhakti. Worship Radha and Krishna as the ultimate lovers and beloved, and the ultimate perfection, the ultimate perfect place to live, Sridhar Vrindavan. Have perfection here, but have all your real inner treasures there. So when you die, you won't think of your wife or husband. You'll think of God. One who thinks of Narayan or Vishnu or Ram at the time of death, he goes to Narayan. One who thinks of Maya comes back to this world. So Priya Priyaya. So the conditioned soul, he can see God. Of course, it's very rare. Just like a very nice analogy. Dirga Darshana, Priya. That the moon was seeing the stars after a long separation of the entire length of the day. And a husband meets his wife after a long separation of an extended business trip to China or Europe for 1 week or 2 weeks. So imagine the Nitya Buddha Jiva, we conditioned souls, janam, 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 lacks and lacks of births and deaths in this material world. This body, that body, this position, that position, this country, that country. Last life, maybe you lived in America. This life, you live in India. Last life, you're born in Germany. This life, you're born in India. This can be told in Jyotishi. They can tell you your past life or future. The science is there in India. Bhrigu Shastra. So for thousands and thousands of lives, we've been on a business trip. For thousands of lives, we've been on a business trip away from our beloved. Who is our beloved? Priya Bhagavan. Our Priya Thakur. Priya Ram, Priya Shyam, Priya Vishnu. And we've been on a business trip all over the universe. Pataloka, Talataloka, Bhumiloka, Swargaloka, everywhere. We've forgotten our beloved, forgot our wife, our husband. And Dirga Darshanaha, as verse 29.2 says, after a long time in the material world, finally we turn our face to God. We look within. We turn our face to God. Introspection. Oh, He is my Priya Bandhu. He is my Mitra, Bhagavan. He wants my love. And He's asking me to love Him. Manmana bhavamad bhakto. Think of me, become my bhakta, my lover, my priya, my pyar. I think I'll do it. So then, when we turn our face to God, then Krishna, Bhagavan will rub our cheeks with kunkum. Our cheeks will become, as it says here, vilimpan arunena shantame. In this analogy, when we turn our face to Krishna Chandra, we're the star-like members of His family, the star-like servants of the moon-like Krishna. When He rubs our face with kunkum, what does that mean? That means as we surrender to God and serve Him with love and purity, then we develop attachment for Krishna, or Ram, say Krishna, and we become very much attached and we start to feel rag. And that rag can become very intense. Intense attachment. We become intensely attached to God, like the great devotees of India, like the Mirabais, or so many devotees you know. They're so much attached to God. The conditioned soul, all of us, struggling in this material world. When that moonlight, that soothing, comforting, nourishing, rasa-filled moonlight of the illumination of God consciousness appears in our mind and heart, then we feel Dirga Darshan, as like a husband, Dirga, after long time, long separation from his wife, sees her again. So when we finally have Darshan of Krishna, Darshan of Krishna, Darshan means philosophy. Darshan means tattva, sambandha, understanding of God. Then also Darshan means sakshad, to see God eye to eye, to feel His presence in the heart, to feel His blessings and guidance in the mind. This is a type of darshan. So this darshan, it will be just like a long lost friend, a long lost friend meeting his friend. Say you were and you went to high school in Europe or college in Europe, in London. You came back to India and you're working for 20, 30 years and you haven't seen your British friend whom you knew in college in London. Then after 35 years, he called you up and said, oh, I'm coming to see you. So then after a long time, you meet again. So we, journeying through this material world, Brahmanda Brahmate Kon, Samsara Chakra, when we finally turn our face to God, because in Shastra it says, Bahirmukha Jiva, Bahirmukhata, that the Jiv, the conditioned soul, is Bahirmukha. His face has been turned away from Krishna. It's very difficult for a husband to put kunkum on the face of his wife if she opens the door, or if the husband opens the door and then she turns like this and shows the back of her head. So in this verse it says mukam, it says kakuba karer mukam prachya, prachya mukam. The face of the eastern direction was turned towards the moon, so then the moon could easily color the face with arunena limpan. Arunena limpan. So because our face is turned away from God for eternity, eons of time, there's no chance for Krishna with his karai, the rays of Krishna's mercy light, or the hands of God cannot touch our face because we're bahira mukata. We turned our face away because we want to enjoy maya, illusion. We want to enjoy suffering and try to be happy. We're living in a world of death, Martyaloka. It's called Mrityu, Martyaloka. This is a world of death. Krishna lives in a world of Goloka. It's called Goloka. We live in Martyaloka. Goloka means cows. What can you do with cows? You can milk the cow and get burfi, yogurt, milkshakes, ice cream, so many things the cow can give you if you live on Goloka. But what can you get from Mrityuloka? Can you milk Mrityu? What will you get from Mrityuloka? Death. Is death enjoyable? No, it's suffering, it's misery. And everything just leads to the final crescendo. All our endeavor, all our education, all our hard work, it leads to the final climax. Hogya. Haribol, death. This is Mrityuloka. Krishna lives in Goloka. So when we turn our face to Goloka, then Krishna colors our face with his hands, with the rays of his hands, the rays of his love. And then our heart fills with attachment. Our heart fills with devotion. And then we develop rag, anurag. And anurag is a stage of intense love where the heart is so much absorbed that he sees that one in love, anurag, one in love sees the beloved in newer and newer ways every time. Anurag. And this is a stage of a level or a stage of Krishna prem, Vishuddha, Divya prem, transcendental love of God in Vrindavan with Krishna and the gopis. Prema, Sneha, Man, Rag, Anurag, Bhav, Mahabhav. So many stages, so many levels of intensity in love. So this Anurag, this coloring will come when one is connected with God. This is one point the Acharyas are telling. And we said, we were mentioning yesterday, because this is all about the Priya Priyaya and combining Dirga Darshan. That as the moon is acting to fill the vegetables and fruits with taste and flavor. So Krishna, he's Rasaraj. So one who serves God with love. Bhakti means serving God with love. Then his mind fills with bhakti ras, that pleasurable sensation where the mind feels peaceful and the mind feels elated and enthusiastic. Imagine being enthusiastic to serve God. Usually, we're very enthusiastic to make money. Every day we get up on time, we take a shower, we hit the freeway, we struggle with the traffic, we beat it out in the office to get that money, paisa, reward, benefit. So much enthusiasm, so much endeavor, for so little result. Because we're driven by our desire, we're driven by our duty. We have duty, family duty, to produce income. It's necessary. We're driven, we're compelled, we're forced. Very enthusiastic. Business people are very enthusiastic. They sleep very little, they work very hard. Same phenomenon happens when someone turns to God. When they start to serve God, they become very enthusiastic. Transcendental enthusiasm. Sometimes they play on this word, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. There's a Greek word in Latin called theos. You've heard of theology? Theology means the study of God. Theos. T-H-E-O-S. Theos. Theology. So enthusiasm means to be in theos. In theos. In theos means next to or with God. So when you're with God, you can be really enthusiastic. Because you're getting up very early. You're working very hard. You're struggling to go to the mandir. You're struggling to serve the Lord. And what do you get? All result, mukti prapti, golok prapti, prem prapti, nityavas, brajanivas, nityavas and brajadam, golok dam. Not nityavas and mrityuloka, martyuloka. We're eternally living. We have nityavas, nityanivas. Some people have houses. I've seen in India, it says, so-and-so's nivas, Mr. Banerjee's nivas, or Mr. Gupta's nivas, or Mr. Agrawal's nivas. That's his nivas. Ni means he's very deeply domiciled there. He's living there. Nivas, it's my house. So everyone has the same house in one sense. We all have Nitya Mrityu Loka Nivas. Nitya Mrityu Loka Nivas. Eternal residence on the planet of death. Samsara chakra. So we can get out. So we have to turn to the moonshine of Krishna. So this is the sweet taste of devotion. Very nice. It explains here. It says that the moon rays create ras, taste or flavor. So when Krishna consciousness, love of God, pure divine consciousness, shines in the heart, It will fill the heart with ras, bhakti ras. That sweet taste, that flavor, that thrill of devotion that comes from serving God in love. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam. It's real. It's not a hype, as we say. It's not a hype. It's not false. It's not advertising. It's not Madison Avenue advertising. It's the reality. Krishna is telling in Gita that this experience of bhakti ras, swaranam, rasa swaranam, you taste bhakti. You taste God's love. You taste God's presence. And you taste God's acceptance and pleasure. Yes, He was pleased with my stuti. Yes, He was pleased with my puja. Yes, He was pleased with my worship, my prayers, my seva. Sevanand. Shastras describe seva of Krishna as anand, sevanand. So this is the actual experience that one has in the line of bhakti, bhakti ras. So this pretty much covered the points here. Of course, Krishna Himself, as I mentioned in Gita, Krishna explains that the experience of God consciousness is real. Like I can say that we're following bhakti yoga path, taking diksha from Guru, trying our best to serve Krishna according to Shastra Vidhi and Nishad Yama Niyam, Shravanam Kirtan Vishnu. But Krishna says in Gita that pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam susukam kartamaviyam. I believe this is 9th chapter. Raja, this 9-2. 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 2. Raja vidya rajaguyam pavitram param iti utamam. Pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam susukam kartamaviyam. So the last line, it says that, okay, king of knowledge, Raja Vidya, Raja Guru, it's a king, it's knowledge, it's Tattva Siddhanta, Bhagavat Tattva, the truth of God, the absolute truth, and it's secret, it's hidden in Shastra, hidden in sadhus. Dharmasya Tattvam, Nihitam Guhayam. It's in their hearts, it's in the Shastras, it's in the Rishis, minds and hearts. But then, the significant point, being a scientist by education, very much appreciate this voice. This verse, 9-2 of Gita, pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. Avyayam means inexhaustible. Avyayam. So he says, pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam. Vagamam, gagam, gamana, vagamam. When you walk, pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam. When you walk or move or travel on the bhakti marg, Krishna Bhakti Marg, Ram Bhakti Marg, Vishnu Bhakti Marg. When you walk in the Bhakti Marg, which means you engage in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, all the limbs of devotion, dedicating your body, mind, words, everything for the satisfaction, pleasure, and happiness of Bhagavan by doing devotional service. Bhakti Yoga. Ram Bhakti Yoga, Krishna Bhakti Yoga. Pratyaksha. It's not pie in the sky philosophy. When I grew up in Christianity, people say, oh, you be a good Christian, you go to heaven. What's the proof? Where's heaven? How is it? What is it? Pie in the sky. I want pie in my mouth. I want apple pie. I'm American, right? Apple pie. I want apple pie and cold milk in my mouth, not in the sky. Can you eat food in the sky? If your Chapan Bhog is floating in Mars, how will you eat it? If it's in the sky, you want it on the thali in front of you to enjoy. So generally, most religions, they promise a result which you'll never see tangibly in this life. You die and you'll see it. And that's true, hopefully, if you perfect your love and your religion properly. But bhakti yoga is different. You get results now. Imagine. Going to school, going to college, it takes you 4 years, 5 years to get a degree. Imagine going to school, the first day you're in college, you get a degree. And the second day you get another degree. And more degrees. So bhakti yoga is a science. It's transcendental. It's not created in this material world. It's not some phenomenon that appeared in this material world. Bhakti is timeless. It's eternal. It's transcendental. Bhakti is Nitya Krishna Prem. It's love. It's eternal. As long as God is eternal, so is love. God is eternal. Love is eternal. When one practices Bhakti Yoga, Pratyaksha Bhagavam, as soon as he starts traveling, day one, day two, he gets Pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means results. Visibility, manifestation, you experience. It's called experiential religion, Bhakti Yoga. Direct now experience. I'm experiencing God today, not when I die, as a hope against hope. I'm experiencing joy, Anand, today in the service of God, not when I die, I hope so. I'm experiencing the spiritual reality, or Golok Dham, in my purview and worldview, now, not hopefully when I go there when I die. Pratyaksha Vangamam Dharmyam. And Krishna says, you do bhakti, you serve me with love and devotion. Right now, today's time, now time, you'll get results. Peace, happiness, joy, detachment. Freedom from anxiety and so many things. Now, right now time, right now time. Be here now. And also I put a further guarantee, you'll get results. Susukam avyam. Kartam avyam. If you do this, practice bhakti yoga, you get susukam. Kartam avyam. You get susukam. You get happiness. Susukam. What do we get in the material world by working hard, making money, social intercourse, reacting and interacting with everyone? We get suk and duk. Some balance. This material world is like that. Some suk, some duk. Seems like more duke and less suk. We're trying for more suk, but we end up with more duke. Suk, duke. Happiness, distress, happiness, unhappiness, joy, sadness, gain and loss, win and lose. So Krishna is saying, susukam kartam avyam. He's saying susukam, a very, not only happiness, but transcendental joy, anand, bliss. Susukam, very deep. Susukam, very special, very unique. Unlike any happiness we've ever had in the material world from material relationships and working. We work hard. We have a term, work. Karm yoga. I'm doing my karm. I'm working hard. We have this term in this world. I'm working for my family. I'm working for my father. I'm working for my mother. I'm working for the nation. Work, work, work. This whole planet is a planet of karma. This is a karmasthan. The earth, Mrityuloka is called karmasthan. We work here and get good results or bad results from our work. Punya karma or pap karma. Good deeds, bad deeds. So this is a karma. But when we talk about Krishna, we don't work for Krishna. There's no work with Krishna. He's Lila Purushottam. In prema, there's no work. Do you say, I'm working for my wife. We may say that because there's no love. Actually, if we actually love our wives, we're serving our wives because I love her. I'm working for my wife. I have this job. I was happy with it. Now she wants more money. I'm working two jobs. I'm working these two jobs to please, for my wife. But in the spiritual world, there's one shloka in Bhagavatam that says the material world is the plane of karma and avidya. Karma and avidya. The material world is full of hard work and ignorance. The spiritual world is full of joy. Sat Chit Ananda Dham. Anandam. So there's not work there, seva. So in this world, susukam kartam avyam, that kartam, that work, that it's not work we do Krishna seva. I'm doing Krishna seva. Nam seva, Smaran seva, Vaishnav seva, Dham seva, Bhagavat seva, Bhagavat Pat seva. It's called seva. And seva is transcendental because it's part of an expression of divine love. So the activity, the karta, is divine, transcendental. Divya karma is divya karma. Krishna says in Gita, there's three kinds of karma. Akarma, karma, and vikarma. Vikarma means extremely, vishesh karma, vishesh, vikarma, vishesh, extremely bad, ungodly, sinful activity, which drives one to hell and suffering while they're living. And then there's karma, which is scripturally ordained and sanctioned. Then there's akarma, which is action, but there's no result in the material world. It's not punya karma or papa karma, and you don't get punya Papa follow, you, this activity, which is not akarma, is actually seva, because seva is transcendental, akarma. This type of action is seva, loving, expressing love through movements of your body, mind, and words. Expressing love of God through your movements of your body, mind, and words, that's called Krishna seva, Ram seva. That is called akarma because there's no result that one will get in this material world, but he'll get avyayam. Susukam kartam avyayam. He'll get inexhaustible, eternal, and unlimited results in the spiritual world. Because seva will give mukti. Work will give bondage. Work gives rebirth. Seva gives mukti. Krishna seva, golok prapti. Jarur. Karma, working in karma, gives rebirth. Janma, whatever they say, rebirth, guaranteed. That's all work ends up like that. So it's not susukam, it's sukam. It's not avyayam, avyayam. It doesn't give inexhaustible eternal results. Because again, you come back to work. Once you leave this world of karma and avidya, this material world is a plane of hard work and ignorance. What's going on? Newspapers. Why are there newspapers? Why are there news channels? Because we're ignorant of what is going on. We live in Bombay, we don't even know what's going on in Bombay. We live on one street, we don't know what's going on in one street. We live in one apartment building, we don't know what's going on. It comes in the news. In so-and-so apartments, room number 27, there was someone died or whatever. Oh, I live in room 21. When I saw the TV news that somebody died in my apartment building. I didn't even know it because we're ignorant. All pervasive ignorance. Otherwise, why are there schools? Why are there news channels? Why are there Dainik Samachar? These are sources of knowledge. The daily news. The daily bad news. So there's also spiritual good news. Daily good news. You can hear and expose yourself to daily good news. A very good news channel. It's called News Channel KRSNA. KRSNA. KRISHNA 108. And the good news is Nitya Bhagavatam Sevaya. Read Bhagavatam every day and you'll feel good. It's only good news. You read the newspaper every day and you feel bad because it's all bad news. So this is a side social comment in the context of a dharmic discourse, religious discourse. Because can you separate God from man? Can you separate God from our life? We may try, but he's still there, giving us light, sun, water, digestion, everything. So this point is being made here about Dirga Darshan, that we meet our dearly beloved. Thank you. Text 29.3 of Rasa Panchadaya, Rasleela. Shukumuni said, Tristva kamudvantam akandamandalam ramananabham navakunkumarunam vanam chatat komala gobi rashchitam jagokalam vamadrisham manoharam. Translation. When Sri Krishna saw the unbroken disk of the full moon glowing with the red effulgence of newly applied kunkum, as if it were the face of the goddess of fortune, Krishna also saw on the ground that in the Yamuna, the Kamud lotuses were opening in response to the moon's presence, and the forest gently illumined by its rays. Thus, Sri Krishna began to play sweetly on his flute. Enchanting the minds of the Brajagopis, who have charming eyes. Vamadrisham. Another translation by my Gurudev. When Lord Sri Krishna began to blow his flute, the gopis all over Vrindavan became enchanted. Their attraction to the vibration of Krishna's flute increased 1,000 times because of the presence of the full moon, the red horizon, and the calm and cool atmosphere, and the blossoming flowers. So we can examine this verse from the viewpoint of the Acharya Vani and their Dristi. Dristva kamudvantam. Dristva, as you know, means to see and observing. So Krishna is seeing and observing something very wonderful and special about Vrindavan. Kamudvantam. Kamud. Kamud is a lotus flower, white in color, which blossoms at night. Very unusual. I believe that such flowers only appeared in Vrindavan. And they only appeared in Vrindavan when Krishna was here. Very, very rare. Usually lotus is open in the daytime, as you know. But this verse starts off with Dristva Kamudvantam Akanda Mandalam. So Kamudvantam, the Acharyas give several meanings to consider and try to understand. First of all, these first three verses that we've been describing and are now discussing are again about the incredible and unique charm and beauty of Vrindavan, the landscape, the moon. As I mentioned, everything in Vrindavan is special. The full moon in Vrindavan is not like the full moon in New York. And springtime flowers blossoming in the fall is never seen anywhere in the world. The jasmine, Malika flowers are blossoming by the will of God for His pleasure, and to incite and inflame his heart with romantic desires from that intoxicating aroma. And then we have kumud flowers blossoming at midnight. No one has ever seen. When the sun sets, the flower closes. When the moon rises, the white lotus opens. So obviously, as I mentioned, there is so much metaphor and imagery here. This is a Kavya Shastra, a Rasa Shastra. It's Tattva Siddhanta Leela. So Shukadeva is a Kavi. He's a great poet, a transcendental poet. He's Dristva Kamudvantam Akanda Mandalam. So because in modern days when you get a love story, it's just the language is not very ornamental. It's just very basic. And it depends on the quality of the writer. with Sanskrit, every word and element, every word contributes to the actual lila. We say Ras Lila. So some people say, oh, get on with it. Get on with it. Hurry up. Get to the actual dance, Ras Lila. But is there any movie, have you ever been to a movie that starts with the climax? Does the movie start with the final act? Does a play start with the final act? Does a movie start with the final climax, the love scene, or that what everyone's waiting for, the anticipation, the awakening, the meeting, and the conflict, and the fighting, and the dancing, and finally, the happy ending, or the tragic ending, whatever. So Leela's no different. So you don't go to a movie and run out and say, I want my money back. I've been waiting 2 hours to find the climax of this movie. I've been waiting 3 hours. Hurry up with this movie. You show me this movie in 1 minute. So why are you going so slow with the Ras Lila? One verse, one word. Because the Acharyas do that. This Acharya Pat. Mahajano Yena Kata Sapanta. We follow the path of the Acharyas. Fools rush in where angels dare to tread. Fools rush in where angels dare to tread. So approaching the Ras Lila, the prized treasury in the jewel store, the Mahanidhi, of all Krishna's Leelas, you don't just jump into it. Even in our common experience, this is a love story of God and His divine consorts. So when you go to a famous movie that's famous for a love story, and what won the Academy Awards and all the awards was the famous love scene in that movie. Some Mayak movie. So there's the anticipation, there's a build-up, and maybe you don't even meet the lover for half the movie. You don't even know what the hero is going to do. He's going here and there, and finally he meets the lover somewhere in the context of the movie. So Krishna's Leela should be less than our experiences of love stories here. It's even more special. So an ordinary love story lasts for 3 hours. Indian movie, how long? 3 hours. And in America, in Europe, I think movies are an hour and a half. Is it right? Hour and a half or something. I think they're half the length because people have half the patience. American movies are 82 minutes long, 79, and that's enough. Americans don't have much patience. But Indians, they sit 3 hours, 5 hours, Mahabharata goes on and on. Arrows are just shooting across the screen for months and months and months. In America, people would fall asleep after the second episode and wake up a year later. Something different over there. Not that that's good. I'm just saying comparing two cultures and two people's levels of tolerance. Obviously, tolerance is a good quality and patience, desirable. So this love story of Krishna and the gopis, the most sacred, pure, inexplicable, mysterious, divine, powerful, and sanctified Leela and all the entire gamut of the Vedic literature, you just jump into the middle of it. So Kumud Vantam, practically speaking, we don't have that particular shastra, but there are books which have 90 commentaries. There are some books that have 11 commentaries. But each verse of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there are 90 different authorized Vaishnava commentaries. 90. And each one has a little different angle, a little different viewpoint. So this love story of Krishna is not going to be over in 3 hours like an Indian movie, and it's already exceeded the time of an American movie. So this divine love story, Ras Lila, is going very slow. How many days class we had? 12 classes were on verse number 3. There's 170 verses in this love story. That's the longest Indian movie that's ever been produced. The Ras Lila love story of Radha and Krishna. It should be long because everything God does is the biggest. God is the biggest, the longest, the most powerful. So we make a movie, it's 3 hours. But if God makes a movie, it's 30 hours. Or maybe more. This movie may be hundreds of hours. So if you don't like the movie, you can't get your money back, but you can leave. So let's go on. See what they say. So the presence of the moon, the flowers are opening, a very unusual event. So the gopis, of course, the analogy here is the flowers are the flower-like hearts of the gopis, and the moon is Krishna. And Akanda Mandalam, the next verse is Akanda Mandalam. This is a poetic Sanskrit metaphor to describe the moon and so many other things. Akanda Mandalam, Dristwa Kamudvantam Akanda Mandalam. The Nayak, the hero of this Raslila drama, love story, sacred love story, he looks above and sees the moon. The beautiful round Akanda Mandalam, the circular orb of the moon, which unbroken circle with continuous cooling light. Then he looks down toward the Yamuna because he's standing right there. Looks towards the Yamuna, or maybe Samacharya says he's still in Nandagram. He looks towards the Yamuna because it's flowing right by Nanda Bhavan in those days. And Krishna sees the blossoming white lotus flowers, Kamud. And then again he gets more stimulated for love. He's getting more and more excited about loving pastimes. So that excitement will reach a crescendo, and then the anticipation will take shape, and he plays his flute to initiate the love story, the divine dance of love, celebration of Ras. So as acharyas do, they're expert in Sanskrit, so they take the word kumud, and it's a sandhi, it's a combination of two words, ku and mud, mudda, or mud, mudda, and kud. Ku means earth, Bhumi, the earth planet. And mud means mood, good mood. Mud, M-U-D-A, mud, kumud means happiness or satisfaction, comfort. So this word, every syllable, every word, as we read in the Shruti fall, in the beginning, the Bhagavad Stuti prayers, half a shloka, one shloka, half a syllable, each shloka has so much meaning. Sarva artakai. Many meanings, rasic meanings, tattva meanings. So this, we're sharing how deep it is and how vast Krishna's, the ocean of Krishna's lila is. So this applies because Krishna's involved here. All these elements are involved because they are called the vibhav. Vibhav is one aspect or one component of Madhurya Rati or any Rati, divine love. The vibhav is that bhav, that instigator of bhav, that instigator of love, that exciter and flamer of romantic feelings in the hearts of the lover and beloved. It's called vibhav alamban and vibhav udipan. So the udipan are the moon and the flowers, and the alamban is the nayak and the nayak. Vibhav alamban are the hero and the heroine upon which the vibhav udipan, the stimulating factors, they act, vishesh. They create some special reaction or movement in the hearts of the beloveds. The full moon, the blossoming white flowers, the maliki flowers. They're called vibhav because they're connected with the madhurya rati of the hero and heroine. So as a vibhav udipan, the environment, the moon, the flowers, more and more vibhavs and stimulants and udipans, udipan, udip, they inflame, make that fire of love, of conjugal love, burn brighter and brighter. And finally Krishna says, oh, wait a minute, I have to do something about these increase in romantic desires, amorous desires. I have to arrange for amorous affairs. How do I do it? Just by looking at the moon? Oh moon, bring the gopis to me. Oh flowers, take my desire, carry my desire in your fragrance, my romantic desire, and carry my fragrance to Radharani's ears or heart. No, that's not how it's done. Krishna turns to his flute. Yogamaya, he's already turned to Yogamaya, and Yogamaya has made impossible arrangements. Gatana, Agatana, Patiyasi Shakti. She's used her power, Yogamaya Devi, the Antaranga spiritual Shakti, Chinmaya Shakti of Krishna, has used her Ananta Shakti, unlimited powers, to make the impossible possible. Flowers blossoming out of season, springtime flowers appearing in autumn, lotus flowers blooming at midnight, The moon staying in the sky and not moving for the entire night and instantly rising at the wrong time according to the Panchang, but at the right time according to Krishna's will. All this is Yogamaya, arranging the Udipan, Vibhav Udipan, to awaken, stimulate Madhurya Rati, Parakiya Bhav, Krishna and the Gopis. So then, the Vibhav Alamban, the hero of the drama, the hero of the love story, will play his flute. Not take shelter of Yogamaya, but his flute. So the presence of the moon gives happiness to the Kumud flower. And Krishna's presence on the earth planet gives happiness to the earth. And Krishna's presence before the Braja Gopis, Kumud, Krishna will walk on the earth, Ku, and he'll meet the Gopis at the Ras Mandala. The Akanda Mandalam also means a Ras Mandala. Akanda Mandalam, Ras Mandala. And he will give pleasure to Mother Bhumi with each footstep he takes, and every footstep that the Gopis and Krishna take in the Rasa dance, the divine Divya Nritya of Ras, Kumud. So Krishna's walking across the earth will give pleasure. And when the gopis meet Krishna on the earth at Vamshivat, then they will be so muda, so pleased and happy. All of this is in one word, kumud. This tattva, this lila. Acharyas are saying like this. So the interesting connection here, because if you read in the Janma Utsav of Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Dasama Skanda, the 10th canto, chapters 2, 3, 4, beginning chapters, it talks about the birth of Lord Krishna, the appearance of Krishna. And before Krishna appeared on the earth, Mother Bhumi was suffering. She was not Kumud. Kumud means, Ku means earth, and Muda means happy earth. Muda, M-U-D-A, Muda, Muda. Kumud, we say Kumud. Before Krishna appeared, the earth was not happy. It was Amud. Or what do you say? Ku Amud. The earth was Ku Amud. Ku Amuda. The earth was not mood, happy or comforted or peaceful. It was very disturbed. Mother Bhumi, Bhumi Mata personified as a cow, was very disturbed. Very much in anxiety, very unhappy. She was feeling burdened and overburdened and cast down and heavy weight. And she met with Bhagavan. She met Bhagavan, who came to ease her pain and hear her mind and relieve her torment. O Mata, O Bhumi Mata, why are you crying? I see tears in your cow eyes. Hot tears. Your tears are not cold tears of love. Your tears falling from your beautiful darkened eyes are hot tears. I can feel with my hand. You must be upset, must be distressed. Burning in torment. Your heart must be burning in torment and sadness. So you're crying tears of anxiety and sadness. And they're hot in temperature. Who has done this to you? Who has caused you such suffering, Mother Bhumi, Bhumi Mata? Then Mother Bhumi, personified as a cow, spoke to Bhagavan. Hey, Bhagavan. Oh, my Lord. I am serving you as the goddess of the earth. I am the Devi, earth goddess. I am Bhumi Mata. I am your devotee. I am your eternal devotee. I love you, Bhagavan. I'll do it. This service, it's my pleasure to serve you as this expansion of your energy, the earth planet. Bhumira po nalo vayu kamano buddhra evacha. I am the goddess of the earth. I am arranging for the production of the trees and seed, giving fertility to the earth and providing, making seeds grow. And together we're working. My Lord, my master, and me, your servant. In any business establishment, the master works together with the servant to do something, right? So Bhumi Mata, she's Bhumi Devi, Bhu Devi. She's working with Krishna to bring about the whole existence and life on this planet. Oh, but my Lord, I am your humble servant. I'll do whatever you ask me. I never want to complain. I'm only crying. I'm not complaining. But somehow you heard my crying. You felt my pain. My pain and burden became yours. And you came to see me and asked me, Oh my devotee, oh my servant, why are you crying? And your head is down like this. And you're looking so sad. Mother Bhumi as a cow, meeting Bhagavan. It's in Bhagavat Puran. So Bhumi said, my Lord, I am happy to serve you. I am happy to carry the heavy mountains, the Andes Mountains, and the Alps, and the immovable Himalayas. And I'm happy to carry the weight of continents, seven continents and five oceans, whatever it is, five, seven, all the heavy weight of the continents and oceans. I'm happy. It's my service. I am Bhu Devi. I'm your Devi. I'm your devotee. You're my Lord and Master. I have no problem. And I'm millions of people, thousands of soldiers are trampling and marching here and there on the surface of my surface. I don't complain. Because they're all, everyone, millions of people living on all the continents. And I'm happy, my Lord, to serve them as Bhu Mata. Because they're God-fearing. They're religious. They're pious. They're kind. They're generous. They're cooperative. I don't feel any burden by the heavy weight of huge mountain chains. Appalachian mountain chains and so many mountain chains. Huge, vast oceans and continents. Millions of people, animals. I can bear the weight. I'm happy. I'm your servant. Oh, then, Mata, oh, Bhumi Mata, then why are you crying? Why are you so sad? And Bhumi was quiet. She was kept quiet. Like a servant would. The servant always keeps very quiet in front of the master. No, Bhumi, please, please speak your heart. Please speak your mind. I am your Lord, and you are my servant. I am your Dev, Adi Dev, and you are my Devi. You are my devotee. You are my beloved devotee, and I am your dear Lord. Please speak, Bhumi Mata. So Bhumi Mata said very slowly and hesitantly, Oh my Lord, hey Bhagavan, please forgive me. I don't like to tell you this thing. It's very shameful and distressing to tell you this very, very bad news. I can bear, as I said, all this unlimited weight of mountains, oceans, continents, people, soldiers, because they're honest. But I can't bear at this time, at the beginning of this Kali Yuga, in Satyuga I could carry the earth, in Treta Yuga I could carry the earth and all its people, and Dwapar Yuga I could carry the earth. But now it's Kali, I can't carry the earth. It's so burdensome. I'm crying under the heavy weight. My back is breaking, my heart is cracking, my mind is full of torment. And Bhagavan says, speak clearly. I understand, I see that. In your face and your posture of your body as Bhumi Mata, Go Mata. My Lord, I can't bear the weight of all the liars on this planet, all the cheaters on this planet, all the Gnostic and atheists and agnostics. I can't bear it. This is Kali Yuga. I'm suffering. Imagine, this is 5,000 years ago. And Bhumi Mata, that great devotee Bhu Devi, she couldn't bear the weight of the liars and cheaters at the beginning of Kali Yuga. How many liars and cheaters are there in this world, in this planet, in this country, in this city? Right now, 5,000 years, Kali Yuga is full on running, full speed. Everyone looks around and says, everyone's a cheater. He's a cheater. He's a liar. He's a cheater. Husbands cheating. Wife cheating. Everyone cheating. Politicians. Everywhere cheaters. Everywhere liars. America, India, everywhere. No exception. We lie to ourselves. We're surrounded by liars and cheaters, and we are one too. If you're in the ocean, you're a fish, right? Fish live in the ocean. What are you surrounded by? Fish. Very simple analogy. So if you're living in an ocean of liars, an ocean of cheaters, then what are you? An ocean, a fish. You're also a liar and a cheater. So how much burden Bhumi must feel? She's actually, not only is she carrying all this, somehow bearing this heavy burden, but then what's happening to all the cows and bulls of the world? That we cannot say. Everyone knows the sad story of that. What is happening to all Krishna's cows in the world? Will they live? Will they see the light of day? Will they live out their natural life? Will they die peacefully in the pasture? You all know the answer too well. So Krishna, when he was meeting with Bhumi, he said, Bhumi Mata, Aramse, Aramse, Shanti, Shanti. And he started stroking her neck. Bhagavan started scratching Bhumi behind the ear. It is all right, Bhumi Mata. I love you. I know you're suffering. But soon, all your suffering will be relieved. I will appear on the earth. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sri jamyaham paritranaya saranam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstat panartaya sambhavami juge juge. Have you forgotten, Bhumi? Time and time again I've come to save you and relieve you and save the earth. I will come. And Krishna came. Janmotsav. And when Krishna came, this is what I'm describing. This is a purport on the word kumud. My purport, my explanation. Kumud. Ku means earth. Muda means happiness, comfort. So it's described in Bhagavad Puran, in the Janam Utsav Adhyaya, what was the condition of the earth? How she was so unhappy, as I dramatically described. Because of demoniac kings like Kans and Shishupal and Jarasand, and lying and cheating. So she was burdened by all these demoniac forces and kings in the universe and on the earth planet. So then the earth, the Brahmins stopped doing yajna. The rains were not falling properly. All of nature was disturbed. The earth was unhappy. It's all described in Bhagavad Puran and Sanskrit shlokas. Then, when Krishna appeared, Janma Utsav, then the fire, the Brahmins started burning their fires again, and the seasons were properly adjusted. All flowers blossomed in the trees, which hadn't blossomed for years. They stopped blossoming flowers, and the earth started producing grains in abundance. The whole earth became kumud. Trishtva kumudvantam, akanda mandalam. 29th chapter, verse 2. Trishtva kumudvantam, akanda mandalam. So when Krishna appeared, all became happy, all devotees. King Ugrasen is a devotee of God. He was locked in prison by his demoniac son, Kans. King Kans threw him in jail, tied him up with chains, and said, "I am the king." King Kans. Father, go to jail. That's in Bhagavatam. He was crying in jail. Now he's feeling happy. Ah, the Lord has appeared as Devaki Nandan, Vasudeva Nanda, in the prison house. I've heard the news in prison. So then he became happy. All the devotees became happy. All the Brishnis in Krishna's dynasty, they had run out of Vrindavan. They had left Brajmandal to hide in caves. They were hiding in caves, shivering in fear of the demons and asuras and rakshas who were running around the earth everywhere, terrorizing, killing babies, killing cows. It's all there, even at the beginning of Kali Yuga. Then Krishna appeared and everything became beautiful. So when Krishna appears, when we have a Janma Utsav in our heart, when Krishna appears in our heart, then all the dirt of Kali Yuga, and all the cheating of Kali Yuga, and all the lying of Kali Yuga, which is so much invested all of us, and so much control all of us, we've all become big cheaters and big liars, or little cheaters, little liars. We can't help but be. It can't help but be. You're living in the sea, you'll be wet. Yes? Can you jump in the ocean and not get wet? Impossible. Can you live in Kali Yuga and not get wet by Kali's Prabhav? Kali Prabhav! Hojaga. Anger, greed, lust. And then to cover it all, make it all work and somehow put oil on the wheels and make all the gears work together. Lie, this lie, white lie, green lie, black lie, blue lie. Cheating business, husband, wife, money, this, that, taxes, everything cheating. It causes so much pain and disease in our brains and bodies. So invite the Akanda Mandalam, invite the Akanda Mandalam and the Kumu Drishtva, the territory of our heart, the soil of our heart, the territory of our heart, the Ku Kumud, the earth, the Ku, the earth of our heart will become softened and purified and free, will become Satyam Param Dhimahi. Satyam Param Dhimahi. The absolute truth is that pure intelligence is eternal, Satyam Param. Truth is eternal, Satyam Param. Transcendental truth will make us pure and truthful. The truth is God and God is truth. So live in the truth, speak the truth, and preach the truth. Param Satyam Cha Dhimahi. This is human life. This is the meaning of human life. So this is some meaning of this Drishtva Kumudvantam. That Krishna's appearance gave pleasure to the earth. pleasure to the gopis, and pleasure to any jiva who allows God to appear in his heart, and allows God to illuminate his mind and heart with his akanda mandalam of his prema, kripa and prema, he will become muda, happy, peaceful, joyful. It will be seen on his face, it will be seen in his actions, and it will be felt by his presence. When you're in the presence of a saintly man or woman, you feel good. You feel the presence of God. You feel happy. This is prabhav, saru prabhav. The prabhav of his prem, the prabhav of his purity, and the prabhav of his astikyam. He follows the rules and regulations. He lives purely. He speaks honestly. It's told, believe it or not, this is in Puran. It says, now see how impossible, this is a prediction, I suppose. This is a challenge to people in Kali Yuga. In Puran, there's a shruti fall. If a human being can speak the truth, satyam, if a human being can speak the truth every single month, every single week, every single day, every single hour, every single minute, for 12 years continuously, as a brat, what will he get? What will his brat fall? What will be the result or the benefit or the fruit of his penance? He will get a siddhi. It's called vag siddhi. He will get the perfection that whatever he says will come true. So you read about yogis in the ancient times. Someone makes an offense to some yogi and he says, listen, you become a lizard. He's a human, manush rup, he becomes, what do you say, jingili, what do they call it? Chipkali rup. Abhi manush rup, then sharp or cursed by a sage who has this power. This is the power. Amazing, unbelievable. But at least, if you tell the truth, for 12 years, to your husband, is that possible? To your wife, is that possible? To your boss, is that possible? Practically, nowadays they have to change the Puranas. They have to change the Puranas to modify for the changing times. This discussion is sometimes there amongst scholars. Should we change the Puranas to suit the mentality of the modern times? To suit the changing demoniac, asuric, bhav mentality of the modern times. Scholars debate like this, spend hours of time uselessly. Shastra is praman, it's to be accepted and followed and benefited by. So the idea, if you can do this for 12 years, you get blessed by God. Whatever you say becomes true. So when you tell someone, when you give ashavad, or you give blessing to someone, they'll come true. May you be healthy, may you be wealthy, may you be happy, may you be God-conscious. Krishne Matir Astu. Krishne Matir Astu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's sannyasi. And he traveled all over India as sannyas, as guru. And so many people met him in South India. Oh Gurudev, oh Swamiji, oh Maharaj, Ashirvad Chahiye. Ashirvad, please give me blessings. And he would say one thing, Krishne Matir Astu. Astu, bhavatu. Let it be, let your mati, let your intelligence, your discrimination, your inclination, your buddhi, turn to God. May you turn to God, Krishna. Krishne, matir, astu. And because he's God, and because he's the parasatyam, whoever he told that to, they became Krishna conscious, and their mind turned to Krishna. So they asked Guru, nowadays, the people go to gurus and sannyasis, oh, please give me a blessing. And they say, Mangalam Bhavatu, Ayushman Bhavatu, Sarva Mangalam Bhavatu, Akala Mrityu Bhavatu. So many blessings. Sarva Mangala, Sharir Must Bhavatu. May you be healthy, may you be strong. And guess what? Practically nothing ever happens. Their blessings or ashirvad becomes nishfal. Why? Because who can follow? Some, of course, have the power. Those Siddha Mahatmas, those great acharyas, they have that power. I'm not denying that. But in general, as we have experienced, and as most of you must be knowing, we simply say this as a formality of speech. It's a formality. In America, we say, We give a gift to someone, and we're trained from youth. When someone gives you a gift, you say, thank you, thank you. Totally plastic, artificial response. In India, I've lived here and I've given so many gifts, you know, toffees or prasad or clothing to children, or so many things I give to poor and needy people, food, clothing, etc. They've never said once, thank you. Never once say, thank you, unless they're brainwashed and they come from Mumbai or something. If they're from Mumbai or Delhi, they say, thank you, in some type of strange pronunciation. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Swamiji. Thank. T-A-N-K, thank you. And I was curious. I give nice brand new cloth or dhoti, whatever, buy school books, many things that people come. And not once they said thank you. At first I said, these people are not courteous. These people have no manners. And then I asked my friend, some of my well-wishing Indian friends and students, I said, don't you say thank you here? And I said, no, we don't have that in our culture. We say thank you with our eyes. We say thank you with our eyes. We say thank you with our hearts. Then it opened up a whole new chapter of human relations and a whole new way of communicating heart to heart, eye to eye, which is real, which is human, which is the best things are left unsaid. If you have to tell someone you love, if you have to tell someone I love you, that means there's no love. If you have to tell someone I love you, or if you have to have someone, your wife, tell you that they love you, that means there's no love. Why? Because if there's love, you'll know it, you'll be convinced of it, you'll feel it, and no one has to tell you. Your wife never has to tell you once in her whole life that I love you. This is American propaganda. She's showing you, she's not telling you about love, she's showing you love. She's walking her talk. She shows love in her face. She shows love in her movements of her hands when she serves prasadam and she serves you. She shows love in her behavior, in her wording, in her sentences, in her dealings and interactions and understanding, and the husband vice versa. You show love, you express love, you never speak about it. So the same thing with gratitude. Love is one quality of human culture. Gratitude, appreciation is a quality of human beings. So Indians are a very deep culture. I learned so much living here for 25 years about what is real love and what are real relations. And then I started to notice, I said, oh, actually, they're saying thank you in so many ways. So then I would give a bag of toffees, some mango toffees, no chocolate. We don't give chocolate toffees. We gave mango, some sattvic toffees offered to Bhagavan. Giriraj Prasadi toffees, mango, Amka toffee. Give a whole bag, 100 rupees, whatever. And then the kid, he takes it in his hands. It's such a beautiful way to express thank you, which now I never want to hear thank you again. I never want to hear anybody say, thank you. It's so plastic. It's so artificial. It's so mechanical. Actually, nowadays, the kids in America, they have that on their cell phone. They hit it. They have a speed dial. So when their grandmother gives them a gift, they press the phone. And the pod says, you know, the phone pod says, thank you. it's in other words, there's a recorded voice. That's what I'm trying to say. So you give the toffees, and the little child, 5 years old, he looks up at you, and he takes it, he goes. Then he's so much happy, and then he takes it like this, and he puts it under his shirt. He puts it under his maid, or whatever, his shirt, kurta, because he doesn't want his friends to see it. If his friends see it, they'll bust open the pack and take half his arm candy. So he runs really fast to somewhere to his house or something. That's appreciation. That's gratitude. That's real. He hasn't been trained up. Listen, Junior. Listen, Preeti. When your uncle gives you a gift, you have to say, take it and say, thank you, Mama. Thank you, Cha-Cha. This is artificial. This is American style. A for America, A for artificial. I for India, I for incredible. I mean I, India, I incredible. Incredible means incredible people, incredible culture, incredible relationships, incredible gods, incredible sacred rivers, incredible sacred places, an incredible holy men and holy women, an incredible variety of religions and yogas, an incredible color and variety, incredible faces. India is like a heaven for photographers. Everywhere around the world, anybody's a professional photographer from Europe or America. He'll ask his friend, "Have you been to India?" "No, I haven't been yet." "Oh, you're really missing out. There's 1 million types of faces there. 1 million varieties of faces. Unbelievable. You put all the faces of all the European faces together, all the American, Spanish, and you get about 500,000. You get about 1,000. You come to India, there's 1 million different faces. Desert faces, city faces, country, all kinds of faces. Gujaratis and Punjabis and Maharashtrians, so many types and all different varieties. A plethora, a whole emporium of varieties of emotions. This is India. Incredible India.